Want entertainment designed just for you? Then check out customizable streaming TV from Xfinity. It makes your life simple, easy, awesome.
Xfinity gives you customizable streaming TV options. Enjoy the most free shows anywhere on any device, and even access your streaming apps right on your TV with X1. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today to learn more. Restrictions apply.
Warning. This show contains adult political themes and language. Liberals and little children should cover their ears.
Welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps, where negativity never sounded so good. Now here's your host, Thomas Purcell.
Good morning and welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps. Make sure to follow our show at our website at libertyneversleeps.com. Be sure to follow our Twitter feed at Real Liberty Tom and join us on Facebook at Real Liberty Never Sleeps on Facebook.com. Good morning. We've got some changes to announce. It's kind of a long thing that I got to talk about today. We're eventually going back to a more visual show on YouTube. Now, that is not going to happen overnight. What I'm doing here at the house, I don't know if you can hear it or not, but I'm in a room with nothing in it except my broadcasting desk. We're kind of rebuilding the man cave. The first step, yesterday afternoon, all day, I had an internet crew out building me essentially a smart home. They put in a high-speed optical cable. So my internet service is no longer a modem. It's a direct high-speed optical line. In other words, it's like Google Fiber, but it's my local cable company. You know, the internet speeds that I'm getting now are about 10 to 20 times that of the average customer. So the reason I'm doing it is because this room is actually being converted to a broadcasting studio. Now, this will happen over a period of 6 months to a year. After we did all the fiber optics and new cable panels and security devices in this office, they are coming actually today to paint and repair a lot of the walls and whatnot. Then their flooring company is coming and doing the floors. Then we're putting in the bookcases and broadcasting desks. And then we'll gradually start doing a visual show on YouTube. That won't be available for those of you who are new listeners through the People's Pundit show, but it will be available for those of you who want to go to our YouTube show. So we're kind of expanding the show in a sense that I'm doing a more visual show for those of you who are on YouTube. You'll be able to see me and see the broadcast desk as I do the taping of the show. It's something because I've always taped the show visually. A lot of people don't know this, but the audio feed that you're hearing is actually a video feed that we just simply separate the audio out and send it to our podcasting site. And I've always said, well, you know, I could do this as a visual show. We used to do it as a visual show, but the equipment and the technical problems with it became more difficult and problematic. Well, we're going to offer it again on YouTube because I think it's a value to our customers who are watching through YouTube. And now since we're crowdfunded, we can do it. And there's a whole lot of things that are going on. So I just wanted to start the show with that to let you know why there's a slight echo in the room, because there's nothing in the room except my desk. There's nothing, all the walls, how all the pictures were taken off and whatnot. It used to be a traditional like living room in a home or man cave. Now it's going to be really a true studio. And I think that it will bring a benefit to those of you who have been funding the show. And this is out of my own pocket, of course. This is a very expensive process. The cable company installed all the devices yesterday, all the panels and whatnot, and it's quite sophisticated. It also provides me a way of more security at the home. They can do more with this. The home will be 24/7 monitored and that kind of thing. So it's for my protection as well as providing a better show to you. Anyway, we've got to move on. We got a lot to talk about today. There's so much going on about political analysis in the news. You know, you constantly see new and interesting podcasts come up, and lots of radio shows and whatnot. But I've always felt most of them are going into the hypothetical rather than true political analysis. What we do here on the show, which is why I started with the changes that are coming, is take all of the facts, analyze them, and present you options of what it's probably going on, and based on my predictions and ability, telling you what's really going on behind the scenes. In other words, why is Trump saying this? Why is Jeff Flake doing what he's doing? Why is Hillary Clinton? What may be coming in the future? I feel that that's true political analysis. What goes on in the mainstream news is not political analysis. What goes on in mainstream news is mental masturbation, for the most part. There are very few true political analysts left. All you get are people that are of limited, shall we say, I don't want to say intellectual depth, because there's some smart people out there. They just don't have the experience in dealing with human behavior that I do. As I've never been, I've made a secret about my experience with human behavior comes from the financial planning and dealing with people over a 30-year basis and essentially sales jobs, right? Which mostly management and financial planning, and there's other elements in my background. But I have had an enormous amount of experience in knowing how people think. I have since gotten my doctorate in political psychology. I've done other things and to give me some sort of credibility. But I can tell you for a fact that when somebody says, I'm going to jump this way, I can tell you why. And I'm pretty good at it. Over the last few years, I've done predictions on this show about who's going to win elections, who's not going to win elections, why people are doing things. And I have to tell you, the most recent story that's out there, which is this guy Khashoggi, which apparently disappeared after walking into a Saudi consulate in Istanbul, is high comedy. Hearing the political analysis by some of these talking heads, particularly on shows like CNN, MSNBC, they're so far out there. I've seen or listened to shows that have suggested that Trump had something to do with it. I've seen most of these shows or talks about it, and almost all of them, to a man, without fail, never really discuss the whys. Why would Trump do something like, why would a Trump be involved in something like this? And never asking the question, why was Khashoggi killed? I haven't seen anybody. And this is something that political analysts should do. Well, why do you think he was killed? Because everyone's saying, oh, this is an outrage. And they're always assigning blame in political analysis on these shows, which is what I'm getting to. They're never really discussing the why. Why? And then true political analysis about the why. Why was Khashoggi killed? Why would he have been killed? Well, he was doing articles about the king of Saudi Arabia that weren't flattering. No, that's not it. Because there are a lot of people that do unflattering articles about political leaders all across the world in various nations, and they don't get killed. Oh, sometimes they do something stupid, like do a blog from Malaysia and then talk about the Malaysian king and when there's laws about it. That's essentially stupidity, right? You know that it's against the law to do that, and you know you don't live in a country where human rights are a joke. Why would you do that? So they end up in jail and wonder why that happened, right? There's a number of countries I won't go to ever because I've done stories and whatnot, and I know that there's no human rights there. There's no protections. There's no court of justice like there is here in the United States or jury of my peers. So you don't set foot in those countries. You just don't travel there. You use your common sense. But why was Khashoggi killed? That's what the question that nobody seems to want to really delve into. The fact remains, Khashoggi really had some connections and ties with various organizations around the world that were extremely hostile to Saudi Arabia, as well as to Israel, as well as the United States, have a bad track record. And I'm not saying that Khashoggi did those things or had any real connect or was in charge of them or whatever. But he represented a serious threat to the stability of Saudi Arabia. Let's put it that way. I don't think that there's any doubt about that. The evidence is considerable, and it's not just columns. It's actual activism. It's actual acts of what some would consider treason or sedition to Saudi Arabia. Remember, he was a citizen of Saudi Arabia and was living in the United States in exile and working, quote unquote, for the Washington Post as a journalist. Journalist in name only. He wrote articles, but most of his time was spent in creating friction for Saudi Arabia. Now, that's not justifying murder. I want to say that straight up. That if the Saudi Arabian kingdom did this as a state act, in other words, the king ordered his death, and then there were people lying in wait for him in this consulate, and then they killed him in whatever fashion, chopped him up around. It's more, you know, salacious to talk about the way he died, if he died. It's the kind of a thing where that's outrageous. It really is. It doesn't matter if the guy was a journalist for the Washington Post. It doesn't matter if he was a social activist. It doesn't even matter if it was an act of sedition. If the king ordered it, it's something that the world community is going to take a very dim view on, and it's why world markets are destabilizing. The question is, does a Saudi Arabian country, which is under Islamic law, which has very harsh penalties, I mean, my God, they still cane people over there, right? They still whip people. They still stone people. They still hang people for certain social crimes, such as homosexuality and things like that. Does that country have a right to exercise its law, in other words, a death sentence, under the orders of the king, under their law, by a citizen who commits sedition? Well, I looked it up, and the penalty for what Khashoggi was doing was the death penalty. It's why he was living here in the United States. But does that give them the right to do that in that consulate? That's a question that would be a true discussion for political. I don't see that anywhere. Everyone's just saying, it's outrageous they killed the journalist. Well, is it? I mean, you understand that he's a citizen of Saudi Arabia. He's under Saudi law. If you have an issue with the Saudi king issuing a death edict and then executing it on Saudi Arabian land, this is not in, yeah, it was in Istanbul, but the consulate is Saudi Arabian soil under law. If you have a problem with that, well, maybe we should have a discussion about Saudi law. Maybe we should have a discussion about the Sharia law that exists in Saudi Arabia. Let's not go automatically say, oh, that's outrageous. It's not so outrageous under Saudi law for them to execute a death penalty. It's not necessarily an assassination if a government determines that, particularly a Saudi Arabian government, determines that he was hostile to the king of Saudi Arabia. Now, this king, Donald Trump has said, has denied knowledge of it. It's also possible that a lower-level person in Saudi Arabia decided to issue the death command and somehow convinced Khashoggi to step into that consulate. That's entirely possible. You know, when people are making fun of the fact that Donald Trump said, well, it might have been rogue actors, that's not uncommon, especially in a monarchy. Especially in the Saudi kingdom, we know that there's a lot of friction between different families and different factions in Saudi Arabia. It's entirely possible that there were some people who were members or members of the Saudi government that did this on their own. Remember, it's been determined that the 9/11 attacks were funded by certain members of the Saudi government, that it wasn't Saudi Arabia's king, in other words, who issued an official edict, oh, we're going to help these people and we're going to fund this attack on the United States. That's not it at all. There were elements of the Saudi Arabian government which have been held accountable. This is why the United States, if it takes action against the Saudis for any reason, it should be under a situation like the Magnitsky Act. Excuse me, I have trouble saying that word. Magnitsky Act? I'm terrible. It's my illness. And that's how we should do it. We shouldn't punish Saudi Arabia so much as the actual individuals. In other words, let's say the Minister of Justice decided, okay, let's get Khashoggi. let's set them up. Let's bring them in, and then we'll execute them. Because, you know, Saudi Arabian law, execution is lopping off your head, right? And let's do this, and then we'll tell the king we managed to get Khashoggi, kind of thing. If that's a situation, and if they're members that are diplomats here in the United States who are part of that delegation, who are associated with that minister, we can take action against them. We can take economic sanctions against the individuals. We can take actions in ways where we can expel diplomats. And that is a kind of a thing which wouldn't disturb markets, which wouldn't damage the relationship that we have with the Saudi kingdom. And that's really important. People forget that Saudi Arabia is an ally of the United States and has done wonderful work as far as settling differences between some of the more westernized Islamic nations and Israel. They have supported us in a number of ways, and it's not just about oil. OPEC now provides us less oil than it ever has. It's not an issue of dollars. It's not an issue of money. The United States is an ally of Saudi Arabia, not just friendly to it. And that carries with it significant meaning. And when you do things like this, when they exercise their law in a way that we feel is inappropriate or illegal in any manner, as it relates to the United Nations and human rights, that's something that we can act on and take individual action against the actors that did it. We don't have to necessarily say, oh, Saudi Arabia needs to be boycotted, and there's no reason to disturb the world markets. And justice can still be had. The individuals that may be involved could be turned over to the United Nations, could be turned over to our country because he was a resident of the United States. It does involve United States interests, and it does involve the actual interests of whether or not he was killed for what reason. And that needs to be discussed, and it needs to be discussed in the world stage. None of these people on CNN, MSNBC, no, it's all about Donald Trump did this. Donald Trump should do that. Oh, it's outrageous they killed a journalist. They have no understanding of the intellectual depth, as I was talking about, of what it takes for a nation to defend its own interests. Saudi Arabia is defending its own interests. As I said, Khashoggi was a seditionist. He was opposed to the Saudi Arabian kingdom. He had stood in opposition to the king, and the Saudi Arabian government and the king of Saudi Arabia have a right to dispense justice under their law. And that's the story. That's the reality of it. Now, people don't like the truth. People don't like the reality of it. Too bad. You know, just as the United Nations, just as the United States doesn't answer to the United Nations, if the United Nations says, oh, you have a human rights violations, we can go tell them pound sand. Well, the Saudis can do that too. Every other nation has the right to do that, to determine what it can do with its own citizens under its own law. That's not a human rights violation. That's a question for other nations to say, well, maybe we shouldn't do business with Saudi Arabia if that's their law. You know, for many years, the United States has stood aside while Saudi Arabia has had human rights violations that would make people here in the United States blanch. You know, these women, they go out in The Handmaid's Tale and they complain about Brett Kavanaugh, but they don't complain about the actual Handmaid's Tale going on in Saudi Arabia. So put it in that context, okay, folks? Anyway, we got to move on. More fakery we got to talk about is Elizabeth Warren. We'll be right back after this brief break. Makes it worth the while, pushing through the darkness, still another mile. I believe in angels. Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to libertyneversleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support.
For a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.
Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas. Donald Trump likes to call her Pocahontas, but the term that should be used with her is Pocahontas. She's a guy who, Elizabeth Warren is a senator that basically used the claim that she has Native American heritage to further advance her political and personal agenda. And that needs to be discussed. Because if she's going to come out and say, well, because of this ridiculous DNA test, which shows that she's probably 1/1024th Native American, and she's going to claim, well, that's proof that I'm Native American, I got news for you. Then we need to have a discussion about what exactly is our laws and benefits that you get from being Native American, and what did she benefit from them? Because the Cherokee Nation, within 24 hours of her producing this ridiculous video of her having conversation with the DNA expert kind of thing, has already disavowed themselves of Elizabeth Warren, has said that taking a DNA test in this way is a complete fraud and is not something to be encouraged and is not what we recognize. We have to ask ourselves this. Well, what did Elizabeth Warren benefit from this? There's no doubt that she claims that her Native American heritage on her college papers, on her Harvard professorship. I mean, the idea that you can claim you're Native American because somewhere back 18 ancestors before you, someone had a relationship with a Native American and gave birth to a child. It is complete and utter nonsense. You know, most Native American tribes say, well, you got to be about 25% Native American to claim heritage, right? In other words, one of your parents or your grandparents have to be Native American. That's really what 25% is, because each child is 50% of their parents. So you got to have at least one grandparent. I think it's grandparent would be 25%. So 50, yeah, 25. You have to have at least one grandparent that's Native American to claim some sort of Native American heritage. She's not claiming that. Her DNA test, first of all, the DNA test, let's discuss this. The DNA test that is done, that was done on her, is completely fraudulent. Because in the article posted by the Boston Globe, because that was the newspaper that posted it. And why the Boston Globe? Why not the New York Times, the Washington Post? Because it's ridiculous. The test done by the DNA expert says, well, we couldn't find any link of Native American DNA in Elizabeth Warren. What we had to do was find links to Peruvian and Chilean DNA, which is similar to Native American. So it's completely fraudulent, okay? First off, let's get that out, all right? And you should read the article because it's absolutely ridiculous. After printing the article, which says, well, according to this test, this ridiculous test, this fraudulent test, she's between 1/10th and 1/512th Native American, which is what? What? But nobody has that kind of ridiculous, you know, range. Then the Boston Globe comes out with a correction and issues a correction at the bottom of the article and tweets it out and says, oh, we made a mistake with the math, after they've printed the article. So the narrative is out there. All the liberals are screaming, oh, she's Native American. Oh, she's Cherokee. Oh, she's not this. She's not that. So they print this update and they say, oh, correction. It was 1/1024th, right? And then obviously the Boston Globe got another call from the liberals, because then they come out 4 hours later with another correction. I mean, within hours, they did two corrections. The correction said, well, she's between 1/512th and 1/1024th, because there is some discrepancy with the type of DNA we used as to Native American heritage. So it could be she's a little bit more than 1/1024th. It's absolutely patently absurd for her to come out and do this. Now, the reason she does it is because the president of the United States, Donald Trump, has been making a lot of fun and getting a lot of political hay, and she's probably going to run for president. If you remember, Donald Trump, in a political rally, discussed Elizabeth Warren's specific in her Native American heritage, called her Pocahontas and all this kind of thing. Then he said You know, if we have a debate, I mean, I hope Elizabeth Warren runs, and I'm paraphrasing. I hope Elizabeth Warren runs, and I would love to debate her because during the debate, I'm going to take a DNA kit and flip it over her, you know, in a nice way because, you know, the Me Too movement, it's basically what he was saying. I'm going to do it in a nice way. I'm going to flip it over to her, and then she can take that test. And if she takes that test and she passed, if she did this, then maybe I'll pay $1 million to her charity or something along that line. I'll make that offer to her if we do this debate. So Elizabeth Warren now comes out and says, he owes me $1 million because he said if I was Cherokee or if I was Native American, I'd get $1 million. My charity, get $1 million. You can send it to, you can, and then she goes through a list of who they can send. I'm like, what the hell? That's not an actual offer, what he said in that speech. And then all of the mainstream news sources, including Shepard Smith, who was a douchebag from the word go, takes the clip of Donald Trump making this speech about how he would have a debate. And then if they did that debate, they would offer her a DNA kit to prove her Native American heritage, right? He takes the clip and he just takes the clip of Donald Trump. I'll give her $1 million. And it looks like Donald Trump says, I'll give her $1 million if she does a DNA test. It's typical mainstream media nonsense. It's typical bullshit. And it's typical Shepard Smith. I mean, he's one of the worst offenders, in my opinion, of fake news. I mean, he's always putting out stories which are half done to suit a political narrative. It's more nonsense. It's more fakery. That's all it is. So Elizabeth Warren does this, 124th, and then we start to analyze that. Because as a good political analyst, I say, okay, what does that mean exactly? When you're 1/1024th of something, what does that mean? The average European, guy living in France, statistically, is about a 1 in 500 link back to Native American heritage. People don't realize that most people are all related to one another. Honest to God, that's the truth. It's like if you take any two people's DNA, you'll find somewhere in their back history, they're related. It's evidence of Adam and Eve, I always say. But, you know, that's for a religious discussion on another day, right? I mean, you can take your DNA and trace them all back, all the way back to Christ or the Roman Emperor Caesar if you want to. Just because the population back at the time of Christ or was what? 2 million people in the whole world, right? So that we all come from them. So if you want to say she's 1024th, she's actually whiter than me. If you trace my ancestry, you'll find that I'm probably 1 in 500th back to Ireland. And the Native American blood is in the European heritage to about 1 in 500. That's how white Elizabeth Warren is. That's how fake this is. Honest to God, the average American living here in the United States is about 1 in 400th. I checked on this. So Elizabeth Warren is actually whiter than anybody else in the world. In other words, more Caucasian. But all of this is ridiculous anyway. I mean, if you want to discuss whether somebody's Native American or claims Native American history because they have a drop of blood in them, which is essentially the same thing, of Native American, well, then you're a friggin' racist then. Then you're saying that a person is because they have a drop of blood or a smidgen of DNA from some heritage that they're that person. You're a racist. That's what you are. Because you're saying that we're different in some way, that we have some sort of benefit from it, that we're somehow better than one another. Well, this makes you a racist. That's the very definition of racism. So Elizabeth Warren, you're a racist. And you're just as bad as people who say we should burn crosses by the KKK, in my opinion. And she's claiming that. And furthermore, let's examine this. In order for you to be 1 in 1024th, right, you have to go back something along the lines of 9 or 10 generations. Well, her claim, like she used to say, well, my meemaw used to walk past, or papaw used to go past this picture of grandma with the high cheekbones and say, oh, she was Native American. Well, that's not true. Because in order for you to be 1 in 1024th, you've got to go back 10 or 15 generations. It wouldn't have been anything on a picture on a mantel place, right? And let's talk about that too. that far back, Native Americans didn't crossbreed with Caucasians. In other words, they didn't just go out and marry a Caucasian. They raped them. So she, not only is she 1/10/24th Native American, but she's 1/10/24th rapist. I mean, that's really when you get down to it. If you really want to get specific about it, if you really want to say, I'm Native American because I have this little bit of DNA. Well, you're also a little bit of this. You're also a little bit of black. You're also a little bit of white. You're also a little bit of Irish. You're also a little bit. Well, where do we stop with that? That's why the Cherokee Nation itself says, well, this is ridiculous. We don't judge a person whether they're Native American because they had a DNA test. We judge it when they say, well, your grandfather was so-and-so or your mom was so-and-so, which is inappropriate. Way to say you're a member of our nation. And she's out there making a video. Oh, and then she's all smiling. Oh, I what does the DNA say? Well, you do have some Native American blood. Oh, is that what it says? Is that the confirmation? Like it's a big revelation, right? Like it's something important. This is typical of the Democrats, too. It's important that we are this person. It's important that you know that I'm black. It's important that you know that I'm Hispanic. It's important that you know I'm Native American. No, it's not. We're all Americans, okay? And this identity politics is driving us apart. It's balkanizing the American people. We're all Americans. I remember when we used to say that. We're all Americans. We all stand together. United we stand, divided we fall. You know, the song and the bumper music. Maybe we should talk about that. That's another thing that nobody's talking about. Aren't we all Americans? Isn't it important, more important to discuss our ideas and the way we think that the country should be governed rather than whether somebody is one drop, 1/24th? I mean, for God's sakes, 1/10/24, Custer had more Native American blood than Elizabeth Warren does. I mean, that honestly, if you really want to discuss it, if you really want to think about it, it's ridiculous that anybody even talks about this. We need to move on. I mean, it's just more stupidity from the left. It's more nonsense in these news stories. Why are we even having news? Why is this news? Well, because Donald Trump made this bet, except he didn't. Right? Except he didn't. Oh, I'm Native American. Except you aren't. You are. That's what the test shows, that you are a Native American. It doesn't show that you are. It shows that you aren't. I mean, if it showed, oh, yeah, you have 25% of your DNA is Native American, so probably one of your grandparents or great-grandparents was Native American. Well, then she could come back and say to Trump, well, see, this is why I claimed it on my Harvard application. This is why I'm the first Native American professor in Harvard history, which she fucking claims. That's what we should be discussing. Why are the Democrats so obsessed with what we are rather than what we know and what we believe and what our ideals are and what we bring to the country? Because they can't. And that's what's not being discussed on all these news stations, Fox included. I say this all the time. It's like, man, is the intellectual depth of everyone getting more and more shallow? They're not hiring. They're just not hiring. They're hiring somebody because they've got blonde and big tits, in my opinion. They're not hiring anybody with any intellectual depth. It's not about smarts. It's not about knowledge. It's depth, as I said. You know, they're plenty smart. All of these women, all of these pundits, you know, all of these young kids, all of these millennial talking heads. It's not that they're not smart. It's not that they're not educated. They have no depth because they can't use their knowledge to think. We need to move on. I got to talk about Sears just because of my own background. We'll be right back. Speaking of background and ideals, let's talk about Sears. We'll be right back.
For united we stand, divided we fall.
Sears is declaring bankruptcy. It doesn't mean it's going to disappear overnight, first off. It's declaring a restructuring of its debt another time. But this is the kind of last straw, last hurrah of what should have been the biggest retailer in this country, not Amazon. I want you to think about this. It's more nonsense. Nobody's talking about this. Again, nobody's talking about it except us. Sears is a department store, okay? Like Macy's, like, God, are there any left? Dillard's. And they offer a wide variety of goods. But Sears originally was the Amazon of its day. Sears used to be the catalog store. I used to order stuff from the Sears catalog. It was like 1,000 pages deep, right? You would flip through it and you could find anything in that Sears catalog. They even had little portals at every Sears location with books. Literally, this is how the Sears used to operate. They had a little in the back room. They had a row of books, right? And they had a row of telephones which would connect you with Sears customer service. And if you wanted something in that book, all you had to do is say, I want that. And they would take your information over the phone, which is a direct line. It wasn't a real phone. It was like a hard line. They would take your information and then you would pick it up from the store. And usually, you know, it depended on stock availability. Most of the time it was a few days. It was a few days, like 3 to 5 days, like Amazon, right? Was the Amazon of its day. They used to send these catalogs out to everybody's home, and it was a big event. If you were in a rural area in the Midwest, I have talked with my significant other who came from those days, the Sears catalog arriving at your home, that was a big deal, especially the fall catalog, which was before Christmas. They had everything in there, man. Dresses, clothes, electronics, toys, games. Myself, I used to, you know what I used to do when I was a kid, when I was 17, 16? You remember the old Atari game? This was a big thing in the Sears. They used to have TVs with the Atari, with the biplanes. It was a big thing, these video games. I mean, you talk about video game industry today. Let me tell you something. To a 16-year-old who had been playing with wood blocks all his life, this was a big thing. The Atari had those. Remember this? I don't know if you, for those of you who are, I don't think you, any of you are old enough, or very few are old enough. They used to have a game called Biplanes. And you just take a biplane, and it was just a dot pixel game, right? Real low resolution, RGB game. And you could buy it, and you plug in the cartridge into your console, and it was biplanes. And Sears used to have the displays of biplanes, or tanks was the other game, going all the time, right? And you could go in and test the game. Well, when I was a kid, if you wanted a new game for your Atari 2600 console, which is that's what it was known as now, you would just go to Sears and order it. They had a whole list of cartridges. And not every Sears store had a row of cartridges. They were always sold out. And these things weren't cheap. They were like $25-$30 back in 1978, 79. You could order from Sears all the different games. They had them direct from Atari. And you just call up the phone and you go, I'd like that game. You know, here's my money. And the game would show up, and it was a big event. All your friends would come over the house, and I have the new Atari game. I have the new Dragon's Lair game, or whatever it was. That was a big thing, and man, they made a ton of money off that. Sears went away from the model of catalogs and home delivery or shipping to stores for pickup. You could have it delivered to your home, by the way, but it went by, you know, UPS back in those days was like 3 weeks. So you usually just, if you were a kid, you just say, I'll just send it to this location. Okay. And then 3 days later, it would show up, or 4 days later. Oh, man, it was so good. And you just run down to the store and you get it. It was always in time. You'd order it like on a Monday or Tuesday. It would be there for Saturday pickup. Oh, it was great. Saturday pickup. Sears went away from that business model. God knows why. You know, they said it was not making money anymore. How could it not make money? How could it be better to stick the stuff in the store where you had electric bills, where you had staff help at expensive rates, where you had to have displays, where you had to have merchandise and inventory. I mean, it's a hell of a lot more expensive to run an in-store model than it is to run a catalog and a phone. But somehow Sears managed to lose money on it. I don't know. The mismanagement at Sears is absolutely breathtaking. They went away from the model right about the time Amazon started on, which is timing was perfect, right? Because now Amazon would just go to people's home. And Amazon was originally a book, just a bookseller. They could deliver to your door in a week or two, as opposed to like the 3 weeks of UPS. They would use other services and their own services back in the day. Sears, I have said many times, refused to change their business model, refused to update their business model. They refused to update their stores. What's a typical Sears store look like? A bunch of fluorescent tubes overhead that buzzed with the typical drop ceiling, you know, those that acoustic tile, and what on the floor? Vinyl flooring. Now, I guess that's okay for budget-wise, but in today's world, if you're going to sell product, if you're going to offer it, if you're going to merchandise it as a brick-and-mortar retailer, which is what Sears became, a brick-and-mortar retailer, which is never what it was originally, then you've got to offer something other than that. Or if you're going to have stores like that, it needs to be bargain basement prices. And Sears is neither. I remember Sears having the best franchises in the world. They used to have the NFL franchise. You could go into a Sears and you could go to like the young adult section or even the adult section and buy NFL gear from all 34 teams anywhere you want. It's like if you lived in Arizona, you could get a Miami Dolphins t-shirt just by going to Sears. That was huge, believe it or not. They went away from that too. They stopped being the only retailer that you could get NFL gear. They didn't want to spend the money. They didn't want to spend the money because NFL wanted to sell more hats and more t-shirts. And as a result, over the years, Sears became parking lots. Go to any Sears today. They're empty. They're badly merchandised, poorly staffed. You could shoot a cannon across the Sears and not hit anybody. That's no way to do business. They constantly would walk away from things that sell. For instance, the NFL gear. NFL gear sold, right? People wanted it. But they didn't want to pay NFL the money, and they didn't advertise it. They didn't promote it. They didn't sell it. So they said, well, other people could sell it better than us, so we're not going to pay that fee. We're going to go away from it. And this is a common problem with department stores, including Macy's, Sears, and other places. They walked away from the electronics business. They walked away from the furniture business. They walked away from everything that sold. Everything that sells, they don't sell anymore in department stores. It used to be in a department store, you go in there and have everything, right? They couldn't offer in a brick and mortar situation the kind of variety that a big box store. In other words, when you go to Best Buy, they have 100 TVs. They have 100 receivers. They have 100. Do they even sell receivers? They have 100 washing machines, right? In a department store, you don't have the room for it. Not unless you have these huge stores. So what they do is offer three or four or a house brand. And so they say, well, we can't offer the variety. So they went away from that business. And then they went away from the furniture business. Well, as a result, those are all things that sold. Those are all things that bring other customers into your store. What are department stores now? They're parking lots of rounders of women's clothing and cosmetics. And I remember as a young man, as a merchandiser, I was a regional manager for Broadway back in the day when they had Broadway department stores. You take a walk with these executives, right? And you go, well, I think we need to put more into money into sofas or whatever, because my department was furniture and electronics. I had electronics as well. I didn't do it as much, but furniture was a big business to Broadway. They would say, well, I only get $100 a square foot from your sofas when I can get $300 a square foot from cosmetics. Because, you know, a little bottle of perfume only takes a, you know, square inch a foot, and we can generate a lot more money. So what they did was is they would downsize the furniture department and increase the cosmetics department or increase the fragrance. Well, what happens is eventually the only people that come in are women, and eventually only older women. Because younger women now buying from Amazon their cosmetics or going to places like Perfume Mania or whatever. So as the foot traffic dropped, business dropped. Now every time you go into a department store, it's vacant, except for what? Except for the two-day sales, the weekend sales, when they're taking deep price cuts, which are artificial, right? I said on this show, Sears will close its stores before it changes its business model. They couldn't do it. They were functionally, intellectually unable to make that leap in logic. Hey, we're doing something wrong. Yeah, I'm sure buyers and vice presidents would walk the stores just like the old days. Well, let's take a look at what XYZ store is doing and how they're improving business. And they would walk these stores and they would talk to each other like, well, we're only getting $300 a square foot, so we got to down. They walked away from business rather than compete. Well, we can't compete. They were always willing to say, we can't compete. We can't compete with Best Buy. We can't compete with XYZ store. We can't compete with this company. Well, why are we even in fucking business then? Well, why don't we figure out a way to compete? Why don't we buy better goods? Why don't we buy more aggressive goods? Why don't we use our buying power? And you know what? It's going to happen to Macy's. It's going to happen to every large retailer. And the reason is because they refuse to change their business model. It's amazing. Nordstrom's is changing their business model. They're offering outlet stores where you can basically be like a Sears catalog store. You walk in, and they have a few things there, but it's really where you would go to pick up merchandise or try on the thing that you ordered. They just basically dressing or stuff. That's changing your business model. That's being more competitive. People want things immediately. They want it delivered to their door, and they want to be in a point-and-click kind of environment where they don't spend much time on it. They are doing other things they want to spend their time on. Well, it's time to change your business model to reflect that. They're not going to do it. They're incapable of it. That's why Amazon's so busy, because the other people who are retailers just won't change their business model. More nonsense. And then we all talk about it, right? Oh, it's changing shit. A moron could have seen it coming. Just go in any Sears. It's empty. Nobody's buying anything from Sears. That's why it's going out of business. Very simple. No customers. Malls, the same thing. People don't do it anymore. It isn't a social gathering spot the way it was. They ran out the kids years ago. They told kids, well, we don't want arcades. We don't want all you kids hanging around in the court. You're scaring away the real customers. Except the reality is those kids have parents. And those parents were hanging out in the malls and shopping in those stores. That's why those kids were there. It stopped becoming a social hangout, like social media is now. And that's why their business is suffering. And they're not going to change their business model. That's why Walls are going to go out of business. That's why Sears is going to go out of business. That's why Macy's is going to go out of business, because they refuse to change. And if you don't change, if you don't update your business model, you're going to go out of business sooner or later. We got to talk one last time. We got to talk about these illegal immigrant caravans. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Give her a feather, she's a Cherokee.
Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to libertyneversleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support.
Cherokee people, Cherokee tribe, so proud to live, so proud to die.
And we're back. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about socialism. You know, because it was kind of a thing with Elizabeth Warren talking about her heritage, and now she wants $1 million pay. I go, typical Democrat, she's always looking for a handout, right? It's really what it is. And I wanted to talk about socialism. Maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow, about why it sucks. I mean, look at what's going on up in Portland. Guys are wearing black masks and running the street ragged, and the police saying, oh, well, we don't want to confront protesters because that's less violent. Well, what the fuck are you there for? What the hell good is a police department? Why are they spending 7 cents on their dollar toward taxes if you aren't even going to do your job? And this is not the people on the line. This is not the cops in blue I'm talking about. Those guys, they, you know, whatever we're paying police officers, they ain't enough to deal with all the nonsense that they have to put up with on the streets of Portland, let alone Los Angeles or San Francisco. I'm talking about the mayors and the city councils, which don't want to let the police departments do their job. That includes stopping and frisking people that are acting suspiciously. That includes clearing the streets of protesters. That includes defending the public and serving the public. They no longer do that. And it's unfortunate. And our cities look it. We'll talk about that tomorrow. I want to talk today about these illegal immigrant caravans. You know what? What do we got? Tomorrow is what? Wednesday? I think Wednesday we'll talk about socialism, and Thursday we'll talk about illegal immigrants and illegal immigration and the solutions. I think those are the two shows that we'll do this week, all right? I want to talk about the caravans briefly today, though. Every year this happens. This has been going on for a number of years. They have these events usually in the springtime or in the fall. And the reason it happens twice a year is because that's when the weather allows it. All right. The weather in the American Southwest softens this time of year. It gets less hot, more rains. You can safely traverse the Sonoran Desert, arguably, if you bring enough water and if you know the fastest routes. This is the time of day. This is the time when illegal immigration actually it kind of works. That in the spring, before the summer hits. The months in the summer, it's impossible. You just die. And they have found dead bodies, skeletons in the desert. People have tried to make and not just adult males, but adult women, children have died. That's why some people put out water stations, but that just encourages it. These caravans come up twice a year. And what they're doing is they're traveling in large groups. And the reason they do that is for their own protection, because there's a lot of people that take advantage of illegal immigrants. Sorry to say, but it happens in Mexico and it happens in other nations, not so much here in the United States. They take advantage of these illegal immigrants. There's raping, robbing, looting, murdering. The drug cartels exploit them by asking them to take in drugs in exchange for safe passage. A lot of children are brought in for sexual trafficking. Illegal immigration is a problem, not just for America, but for other nations as well, because it's a pathway to criminality. Not that illegal immigrants are all criminals. Most of them are coming here for just work. But what happens is, as I said, it's a pathway to criminality. You have people that exploit them. You have people that take advantage of them. You have people that use them. And as a result, because it's an avenue of criminality into the United States, it needs to be stopped. Not to mention the fact that we have laws for a reason. We have limits on how many people we can take in. We don't have room for everybody in the world here. Another reason why America is the greatest nation in the world, we're the only nation that has to enforce a massive illegal immigration problem. You don't have that problem in France. Well, you do. You have elements of illegal immigrants going into France because they've invited them. But you don't have people beating down the doors. They don't put a wall, for instance, around France. Nobody really wants to go to France. They go to France because they can, not because they want to, and because they're fleeing the kind of violence that you see in the Middle East. Illegal immigration is a problem. Because what happens is, if it's a pathway of criminality into the United States, you're essentially turning large portions of your country into a third world country. There's a reason why America's greater than any other country. Do you know what it is? We're wealthier. Excuse me. We have more human rights. We have better opportunities here. As I've always said, American exceptionalism is based on the separation of power. We don't have oppressive leadership here. We have a justice system that works, one of the best in the world. There's a reason why people are coming here. It's a good place to live. As such, you need to keep it that way. People that come here need to say, I want to be an American. I want to live under your system of laws. I want to be an American and act like an American. And that means obeying the law, being part of a justice system, and making something better of myself than I am today. Maybe own a business, maybe become a successful employee. In other words, move upwards in a company and from labor to management. Earn more money. These are all parts of the American dream. Own my own home. Own a piece of property. All of those things are barred to illegal immigrants. All it is cheap labor. Now, corporate America, and when I talk about corporate America, I mean big companies. large companies like illegal immigration. That's why they donate money to Republicans and buy them and tell them amnesty. Not wall amnesty. We want illegal immigration reform. What they really want is amnesty. Because they like the streets full of cheap labor. Because if you're paying a guy to pick your lettuce only $5 an hour instead of 15, well, that means that you don't have to pay the manager that you're that is working in your company $60,000 a year. You could pay him 50. Why? Because a head of lettuce is $1 instead of $4. So it lowers the effective wages of everybody else, not just the lettuce picker. Okay? That's why they like it. It doesn't mean that Raytheon is hiring illegal immigrants. It means that they can pay their executives and their employees less because the cost of living in the United States is less. As I said, head of lettuce is $1, not $4. Because how does an employee come to their boss for a wage increase? Well, you know, I have more debt. I have two kids now instead of one, and I have this, and I need a raise because I'm worth it to your company to keep me here. Well, Raytheon, I'm just using that as an example, all right? It could be Honeywell. It could be any of a million companies here in the United States, big companies, which hire thousands of employees. They're going to say, no, you don't. It's only $1 for a head of lettuce. You don't need all that money. You don't merit a raise. We can't charge more. Let's say if it's a door company, they make doors or widgets. Let's use widgets so I don't, you know, pull one company and make a demon out of them. We make widgets. Well, we can't get $5 or $6 for our widget. We can only get $4 or $3. So why do we need to pay you $15 an hour? We're going to pay you $5. Because I can't get $15 or $20 for a widget because the cost of lettuce is only $1. See, that's how it works. It lowers the effective wage and cost basis of your society. That's the main reason why illegal immigration is a problem. Now, the leftists like it too. Okay? The Democrats are real big on illegal immigration. Why? Because you can pocket votes. Most illegal immigrants, when they first come here, because of the nature of climbing in under the wire, are benefit recipients. That doesn't mean that they will always be benefit recipients, but by and large, in the first few weeks, or in the first few months, or the first few years, they are beneficiaries of benefits. And it doesn't necessarily mean welfare benefits. There can be other benefits in society. Some states allow them to vote. Well, they say they don't, but they say, oh, but we can't prevent them from voting. We can't eliminate them from voting. So what Democrats like is they like the votes. Lots of Democrat votes, lots of poor people voting. That's what we like. Because what do we promise our voters? What do we promise our constituencies as a Democrat? Well, we promise them lots of benefits. Food stamps, Obama phones, Obamacare, all that good stuff that somebody else foots the bill on. The stuff that Ocasio-Cortez thinks is such a great idea that's going to cost the American taxpayers $40 trillion. Well, if you're someone who's a recipient of that, oh yeah, vote for that. Oh yeah, more of that. Or they may be ignorant of our laws and our ways. So what happens is Democrats send people into these poor neighborhoods, right? People that look like them, people who are black, people who are Hispanic, and talk like them and say, I'm one of you guys. You should vote for Democrats, and here's why. And then they go, okay, I'll go vote for them. Well, just get on this bus, and here's your little pamphlet on who to vote for, and go vote, because these are the people that will help you. Okay, because they're not educated. A lot of times they don't speak the language, or they don't have access to high quality education because our public education system is so miserable. So they get on the bus and they do what they're told, not because they're being manipulated. As I said, their church leader, their pastors—that's big in the black community, by the way, African American community. Excuse me. They get the pastor to say, you should vote for this person because of this. So everybody gets on the bus, everybody votes. That's why Kanye West is such a threat to them, by the way. Because if Kanye West has, you know, all these people who listen to his music, and Kanye West says, hey, Donald Trump's not such a bad guy, you should think for yourself. That's what Kanye West is constantly saying. Think for yourself. He isn't saying you need to vote for Donald Trump because he's the greatest guy in the world. He's saying, no, you should vote for Donald Trump. I vote for Donald Trump. But I do it because I think for myself. Well, that is a big problem for the Democrats, because the Democrats make their votes on basically people not thinking for themselves. Get on the bus. Here's your pamphlet. Here's your vote. This is the way you should vote. People, I'm one of you. This is how you should vote. So when Kanye West comes out and says it, this is a side thing. This is what the caravans are all about. Packing the United States with voters or with cheap labor. That's all it is. They're exploiting them. And to exploit a people because of their poverty, because of their situation, because of their circumstance, to say, I need a cheaper head of lettuce. I need lower wages at my company. I need to get those votes to be a senator or a congressman. To do that is, in my opinion, the least Christian thing that you can do. Exploiting a people for your own benefit because of their bad situation, because of the horrible conditions in Mexico, Guatemala, Nicaragua, all these other countries. That's not Christian. So anybody that tells you that we need to do this because of Christian, we need to help these people because they're poor, they're suffering, that's nonsense. You're not doing them any favors. You're not doing them. You want to help them. Tell them at the border, here's a gun, here's our Constitution, go get rid of your leaders. Go overthrow your country. By the way, that's what we used to do. And people took issue with it. Oh, the CIA is toppling regimes. How dare they? Well, you know what? You know what they were doing? They basically were handing people guns and here's a copy of our Constitution. This is the way you did it. This is the way we did it. This is the way you should do it. Here you go. That's what the CIA was doing. Oh, that's horrible. Oh, that's terrible. That's perpetrating violence. How dare the United States interfere in another country's politics? Ah! What are they bitching about Donald Trump? Oh, he allowed the Russians to interfere with our election. They're doing an investigation, a two-year investigation. How horrible. The United States has been doing it for generations and doing it for a good reason, and they should be doing it. Tell other countries, tell other people that are poor, other people are oppressed. This is our pattern here, our Constitution. You want some help? We'll support you. Overthrow your government? We'll recognize your government tomorrow. Overthrow your government? We'll recognize the people that you choose to be your leader. Right or wrong, socialist or not, we will support you. Get rid of these people that are destroying your country. That's how you solve the problem, by sending those people home. And telling them, no, you need to get rid of your leaders. You need to make your country like the United States. Countries that we have done that to are more successful today than they were back when we did it. That's a fact. Look at Iraq. Now, Iraq is a situation where we sent our own boys over to die. That's not the way to do it. But look at Iraq today. It's far more democratic than it was under Saddam Hussein. If you think conditions are bad in Iraq, imagine how they were under Saddam Hussein. Democracy works. Republics work. Constitutions work. Guaranteed limits on government. That works. It's not about human rights. That's why they need to go home. That's what we need to be saying to them at the border. Not teams of lawyers showing them how to get into our country through, you know, loopholes in the law. That's not American. Those people should be disbarred and frankly shouldn't be allowed entry back into the United States, in my opinion. I know we can't do that because they're citizens, I think, if they're lawyers. But that's what I would do. That's how I would shut the borders. And yeah, we can build a wall to help limit it. We'll talk about that, I think, on Thursday's show about illegal immigration as a whole. But that's what's going on. That's what these caravans are all about. That's why everybody wants them here. Oh, we got to protect them. Oh, you know, that's why Marco Rubio, Republican, 1024th Republican Jeff Flake, right? That's why he wants it. Oh, but, you know, we got to have that cheap labor because, you know, all these companies that give me money and help me get elected told me why we need to do that. That they're just as being manipulated just as much as anybody else. Listen, Jeff, we need you as a congressman to stand up for amnesty. Well, how come? Well, you know, we're not going to support you. We're not going to give you this $1 million donation. We're not going to have that fundraiser for you to help you get reelected. Oh, you're not? Well, tell me about why we need to have illegal immigration, why it's a good thing. Well, you understand that, you know, it's a Christian thing to do, and you're helping those people, and you know, you need to open your heart. Well, fuck you. I'm worried about the American taxpayer. I'm worried about the citizen who can't get a raise. I'm worried about the guy who can't get a job. Take a look at the streets of Los Angeles. Take a look at the streets of San Francisco. I know I'm over. Here we go again. I'm just ranting. All of those people that are living homeless, that are wandering the streets taking opioids, they could be working in the fields. It would be a start. And then maybe they'll get into management. And then maybe they'll own their own farm. That's how it works in America. That's the American dream, not owning your own home with an FHA loan. That's a benefit. The real American dream is starting out at the bottom rung and working your way up the ladder and making something of yourself. And anybody, no matter what their color, no matter what their sex or gender or whatever LGBTQXYZ letter you are, you can do that too here in America. We don't bar anyone. In fact, we benefit some people, like Native Americans who want to go to Harvard. We're out of time. Just a rant today about nonsense, about the failures of political analysis, the failures of big business like Sears. Everything's a failure. And you know why? Because they step away from the original concept of what America is. Representative democracy, republic, capitalism, basic ideas of capitalism, build a better mousetrap. Amazon built a better mousetrap. Look at them. Bill Gates built a better mousetrap with Microsoft. What is he talking about now? Don't build a better mousetrap. Don't do it like me. We're going to give it to you. No. You were successful because you came up with an idea, and you and Paul Allen, and sold it. By the way, he passed away. 65, died of cancer, unfortunately. He was a genius. Yeah, I think he was more of a genius than Gates was, but that's a discussion for another day. That's the American dream. Doing something in your garage like Steve Jobs did. Coming up with an idea and then telling other people about it and convincing them that it's a good idea too. That's America. That's the American dream. Building a better mousetrap. We're out of time. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Take care, folks. We'll be back tomorrow. I'm going to talk tomorrow about socialism as a whole. We'll be back then. Take care.
Catholic Relief Services congratulates the Hispanic community during Hispanic Heritage Month. CRS is honored to join in celebrating and paying tribute to the heritage and the accomplishments within the Latino community. The support of Latinos is crucial to our work in Latin America and the world as the official international humanitarian agency of the U.S. Catholic community. Please visit crs.org/heritage to learn more about CRS and subscribe to our email list to learn more about the work that we do in Latin America and the world. crs.org/heritage. We'll be right back.